Hi, this is Barry List of Informs, and we're talking today with Ali Abbas of the University of Illinois. Professor Abbas is a researcher in decision analysis and the author of a recent article in ORMIS Today about helping young people to make better decisions. Professor Abbas and his mentor, Ron Howard of Stanford, have been working with troubled teens for many years. Professor, welcome.
Thank you very much, Barry, and thank you for inviting me to talk today.
I mentioned your work with young people, which you've been doing for as long as you and I know one another. Can you tell us how you began showing teens, both troubled teens and kids who are not troubled, how to take a decision-making approach to the big challenges that every teen faces at this point in their lives?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the work started when I was a PhD student at Stanford, and when Ron and Carl Spetzler founded the Decision Education Foundation, I was heavily involved with them. And it was the first time we go out and we talk to teens about decision-making. And what was striking is that teens in juvenile detention centers, for example, which the work had continued when I came here to Illinois, very smart kids. So it's not about an IQ. They are very brilliant. The only problem is they have some misconceptions in their minds about decision-making. And so I recall, for example, one day when we were at the juvenile detention center in Urbana-Champaign, and I was talking about decision-making, and then a student raised her hand and she said, "You're talking about decision-making, but we don't have decisions. What decisions can we have here?" And I said, "Well, you know, you chose to come to class today to listen to me talk." She said, "Yes, I did that because I need a letter from the judge next week to get me out. Otherwise, he won't give me the letter." I said, "Well, that's a decision." And I said, "Well, do you have any other decisions after you go out of the JDC?" She said, "Yes, I never want to come back again." I said, "Well, how would you do that?" She said, "I'm never going to shoplift, and I'm going to stay away from those people who told me to help them do that." I said, "Well, that sounds like another decision."
So yeah. All of a sudden she realized that, in fact, even though she was incarcerated, even though she was imprisoned, that she could make choices.
Yeah, absolutely, that it's all about decision-making, and the decisions she's making are the ones that are affecting her life and her future life as well.
And what is the Decision Education Foundation that you mentioned a few minutes ago?
Yeah, this is a nonprofit foundation. The president is Ronald Howard, and it's in Menlo Park. And we have been doing a lot of work reaching out to troubled teens and at-risk teens throughout the country, actually, for the last 10 years, maybe. And it's been ongoing effort. And we published a few ORMS Today articles about some of this work. And there's still a lot of ongoing efforts as well. And I'm on the advisory board member for the Decision Education Foundation.
Now, as I was reading your article, I found it interesting that people in the field of operations research, decision analysis, tend to concentrate on business and policy decisions, but they don't use skills as often for tackling life's personal problems. So what interested you in this more personal approach?
Yeah, it was something that you could see. Many people in business have the opportunity to hear about decision-making, and so while they do appreciate what you're telling them, for those students, it's a life-changing experience. It isn't just about a business deal or about taking a class. It's about something they never would have heard of in their lives. And when you see the spark in their eyes, when we would go to the juvenile detention center and those students would be otherwise just sitting there on a Saturday morning having nothing to do, and then here are some people coming and telling them about decision-making and how can they think about it, and they feel they get it. I mean, we present it in a way that is very simple, that everyone can understand. And when you see people feel they get it, that motivates you to keep doing more and more of this. It's a very different experience, Barry, than teaching a class or giving a seminar. Very different.
Now, you mentioned before that you were working with the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center. What kind of work do you do for them?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. Well, first, we went over there and we said, we would like to talk to the residents about decision-making. And they said, well, that would be great. So I went one day with three students from the University of Illinois, and so we had a great whole Saturday there, and we were telling the showing them some demonstrations, showing them about decisions that they actually make. And the interesting story is, after a while, the correctional officers told us, well, what you're talking about is so amazing, we would like to learn it ourselves.
Ah.
And so then we organized, yeah, so it wasn't just about residents. Now, correctional officers needed to be there by law while we were talking to the residents of the JDC, but they liked it, and they said, oh, we want to learn this stuff ourselves. So later on, we organized workshops for the correctional officers, because they said, if we learn it, then we can teach the residents about it and make them aware of the decisions they face in their lives. So that was a next extension above teaching the residents at JDC. Then there was a third extension. I got a call from Champaign County Public Health, and they said, well, you know, people who leave the JDC, those residents, there's an 85% recidivism rate.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in other words, guaranteed that about 85% of the people who leave are going to be back. And so they said, well, we formed this group called the Peer Ambassadors, where we get residents out of the JDC, and we talk to them about, you know, education, about being role models, and they pay them to take classes 2 days a week. But those are the role models, and we want them to go back and teach the JDC. So could you train the peer ambassadors on decision skills? And then we have them go and tell their peers about decision-making. And that was also just an amazing experience, where it wasn't us talking anymore. It was the peer ambassadors, who were at the JDC themselves months earlier. Now they're going back, and they're telling those teen residents about decision-making and how decisions shape their lives. So it's a very, very rewarding experience to see that.
Let me remind our listeners that I'm Barry List of Informs, and you're listening to a podcast with Professor Ali Abbas of the University of Illinois. Let's circle back to the article that appears in ORMS today. Tell us first about the social network you created. It's called Ahuna, what it is, and how you received an NSF grant to make it happen.
Sure. So this was an effort, Barry, to spread decision skills around the country and around the world even. I mean, so far now we're getting it out of the university setting and out of the business setting. Ideally, we would like everyone to learn about decision skills, and it becomes second nature. And while we teach decision making, many of us have never in our own decisions drawn decision trees or used the decision tools that we've learned. We might think of the biases and this. So that was an effort to try to make decision skills spread to the world, and also making it second nature. So the idea was, how can you get people hooked on it and really use it in their daily lives? Well, people love social networks. We've seen that from Facebook. So if we can create something that gets people hooked on and they just like to go on, give comments, but these comments are on decision making, then it'll gradually become second nature. They'll tell their friends about it. And then when everyone needs to face the decision, then their friends will go back on the social network, and it will be kind of like a collaborative effort. So that was the main idea, is how we can really now spread decision skills around the world and in a very simple and fun way.
So how do young people use Ahuna? If they're interested in getting online, what would they do when they reach the website?
Right. So first they sign in, and they can sign in with their Facebook account, or they create an account. And they can add friends and invite friends. So you have a profile, you add things on your profile, you have pictures of friends and all of this. Now, when you're facing a decision, you just post a decision. And then we give them the option, you can post to the world, or you can post privately only to your friends. And you can post anonymously, or you can post with your real name. Now, normally when you ask friends, hey, I've got this decision, what should I do? Your friends tell you, well, just do this. This is kind of like, no, taking a deep breath now. Your friends don't tell you, do this. They tell you, well, here is one alternative, but here are the pros, cons, and uncertainties about the alternatives I'm suggesting. So we make them very clear that they think rationally, that it's not just, oh, do this. No, take a moment, think about it, think rationally about the recommendations you're giving, give me the pros and cons and the uncertainties. And then also think about the preferences. It's been proven that people don't think very clearly about what's in it for them when they're making a decision. They think about one or two factors only, but if they can think about 20 or 30 through their friends from the social network, it helps them get clearer. After the inputs are provided, we run them through a decision engine in the background, and then finally, step by step, and then he tells them, based on your inputs, this is the best decision.
So can you give an example? Can you give an example of a decision that has been posted on the website?
Absolutely. And so there are some few very interesting ones. Incidentally, someone posted recently, what should I do to impress my girlfriend's mother? And that, you could see the age.
An age-old problem.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you read the inputs, this person, first of all, we ask them, we kind of get the frame of that decision. We tell them first, wait, what are you taking as given before we even start any analysis? So we ask him, then you could see he's written in response to that question because he posted publicly, oh, I'm taking as given that I need to impress her mother. We say, yeah, right. Then we ask other questions like, what other things should you be thinking about? And then he says, well, should I try to impress her father? And then he says, another thing I should be thinking about, do I need to impress her mother in the first place or impress her? We say, yeah, that's great. And then we ask a third question at the beginning, at the end after that. Well, what are you going to be deciding later? Then he later says, well, do I want to marry my girlfriend? Is that important? After we ask those framing questions, now we start, okay, what are your alternatives? So he starts getting alternatives from friends, and he adds alternatives. And what are your uncertainties? And what do you really want? Well, he says, well, I want to be happy, I want to have good relations, I want to do that and all that. Then we run them after that through an engine, and then we say, based on your inputs, here is this. What's interesting is, Barry, is not all decisions need analysis, but once you think of those elements of decision quality that we collect, which are the alternatives, the bigger picture, the pros and cons, the uncertainties, the preferences, once you think about all of that, then it becomes kind of like a checklist, and suddenly you can get clarity without even doing any analysis in the first place.
Now, do you find that you have to go back to young people after a while and reinforce the skills that you taught them? Are they remembering them, or do they need that extra push later?
Yeah, you know, Mary, so with the juvenile, when we went and we taught there, we went there, and then we went a month later, they had still remembered, the peer ambassadors got it, but they did need refresheners. On the social network, they do it, and it becomes second nature. So, as an example, in my apartment in Chicago, the doorman, when he sees me now, he's asking me, okay, well, here is this alternative. Do you think I thought correctly about this preference? Suddenly, people are speaking the language of decision-making just because they're on the social network all the time. And just like you have a stream on Facebook or other social networks, you're seeing, oh, your friend added a bigger picture to this decision, or added an alternative to this decision, or added a preference element. And so it becomes second nature after a while that you're thinking with this methodology just by being on the social network. It's a very different feeling, Mary.
Getting back to how you work with young people in the classroom, I notice you use something called decision journals. What are they?
Right. So this has been a very new experience that we started this year. Every week we ask each student to post a decision that they are currently facing or will be facing in the very near future. They post a story about a decision they have made in the past, and they tell us the thought process and the outcomes. And they also post a poll and ask, and then they have to predict the results of the poll. And by doing that, they get to know a few things. One, the group members respond with elements of decision qualities to the decisions that are posted. So if a group is three or four, every week when they do this, the assignment is 8 weeks, students get exposed to about 30 to 35 decisions. They're helping people with that during the whole semester or during the whole course. So by then, they're getting the inputs of the decision, and they're learning on how to give good elements of decision, the inputs themselves, before any analysis is calculated. By the end of the 8 weeks, we've already covered decision trees and multi-criteria decision-making in the classroom. So we tell them, okay, now we want you to analyze those decisions that you have posted and then reach the decision. What's really good about this is those are real decisions people are facing. So students are inviting also their parents to give them feedback. So someone is asking, which job offer should I accept? Or should I go to graduate school, or should I accept this job offer? And then you could see the inputs coming in. And the excitement of students saying, okay, well, now I'm analyzing a real decision that I'm going to be facing, and I'm actually using the tools that I'm learning to do it. And so this, by the end of the 8 weeks, they've helped 32 people with their decisions, and they've also analyzed 8 decisions that they are currently facing in their own lives. Now, in the stories, which is about a past decision, they comment on people's decision-making and the thought process that went. So they get used to listening to people talk about their own decisions, and then they give them feedback by using the decision analysis methodology about how they could have thought about the decision they made in the first place. And the polls, it's just a predictive analytics. It gives them, we ask them to predict what the result of the histogram is going to be. So every week they get training on predicting uncertain events, and they calibrate themselves as they go throughout the semester.
And where is the course taught? Is it taught at the high school level, or are you also doing it at the undergraduate level?
Right. So this semester we taught it at the undergrad level here in Illinois. Most of them were seniors, about 80 students. In February, we're also going to be teaching it in high school, Uni High over here, on a three-day course. And then also we're going to be teaching at the Juvenile Detention Center in January, where we're just going to go and then tell them about it and then let them by themselves navigate and explore and understand the elements of decision quality.
Final question. Some of our listeners are academics and themselves expert in decision analysis. If they're interested in using your methods, is there a way to access your syllabus or other training materials?
Absolutely, Barry. I mean, this is something that we would really love, because what we did today, we were this semester, we were doing it simultaneously with Virginia Tech. And so we had our students posting, their students posting, them helping each other. It actually enhances the experience a lot more. So if anyone is interested in teaching a course about decision making or decision analysis anywhere, please email me. I'd be happy to send you all the teaching modules that were developed and get access to the social network. It's free. We're going to be posting video tutorials on, and the hope is that we can create this culture where people are helping people make real decisions, and while they're doing that, they're also learning a lot about decision analysis and just enhancing decision skills around the country and around the world. It's such a great experience, Barry, and I really ask anyone who's interested, please do email us, and we'll be happy to share what we've learned and this whole experience with everybody.
Great, and we will have on our website, we will include your email address and any URL that you recommend. That's all Great. The time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Ali Abbas of the University of Illinois. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Barry. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Informs Today, a podcast by the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more information about analytics, operations research, and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. And remember, keep on crunching those numbers.